Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Amanda Hayes. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Anna. It's nice to be back here with you.
Yes, it's good to have you back. It's been a long time.
It has.
Yeah. Amanda's just had a lovely holiday, so I'm very envious. And today we are talking about Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro. But first, book news, and it is still awards season. So the latest one is the Booker International Prize long list has been announced, and that is the prize for a book in translation and half the – I think it's £50,000.
Pounds, yes.
And half the prize money goes to the author and half to the translator. So it's a really good award to highlight the work that translators do to bring fiction to us in the English-speaking world that otherwise we wouldn't have access to unless we learn lots and lots of languages. And so the long list is I Live in the Slums by Kan Xue, translated from the Chinese by Karen Jernant and Chen Ziping. At Night All Blood is Black, which I have a real trouble saying that title. I don't know why. At Night All Blood is Black by David Diop, translated from French by Anna Moskochevakis, and that's a Pushkin Press title.
Oh, okay.
And I love Pushkin Press's editions. The Pearfield by Nana Evtimishvili, translated from the Georgian by Elizabeth Highway. The Dangers of Smoking in Bed by Mariana Enriquez, translated from Spanish by Megan McDowell. When We Cease to Understand the World by Benjamin Labatut, translated from the Spanish by Adrian Nathan West. The Perfect Nine, The Epic Gikuyu and Mumbai, that's by Ngugi wa Thiong'o, translated from the Gikuyu by the author. And that one, Chigozie Obioma was raving about this book and this author, and he's apparently quite a rock star that we've never heard of.
In Kenya.
Yes, I think so. And so I'm really intrigued by that one.
Yeah, and if he wins, he'll win the full amount because he's translated his own work.
Yes, very clever author. The Employees by Olga Raven, translated from the Danish by Martin Aitken. And so I'm very intrigued by The Perfect Nine, just on Chigozie Obioma's recommendation, and also The Employees, just because I think it's a long time since I've read a Danish book, Amanda. So I feel like it's time to go to Denmark.
Yeah, we virtually. Could do that. Yeah, virtually, of course.
I know. And I'm sure that there are a couple of other gems in there. So let us know if you've read any of these, because it won't surprise you, but Amanda and I had really not heard of them, had we?
No, I always love it when I've heard of one of these authors, but no, not this time.
No, so they're all new discoveries. So that is very good. And then the other book news this week or last week was Beverly Cleary, the author, died aged 104. So it is a very good innings.
Indeed.
But she was one of my favourite authors as a child,
same.
With the Ramona. Yes.
Ramona the Pest.
Love that and book. Ramona and Beezus. Yeah. So Ramona was the younger sister, wasn't she? And they were the best books.
They were so funny. I still remember Ramona the Pest wanting to pull the springy curl of her friend Susan and watch it bounce back. And I remember that so vividly because I had a friend in primary school called Jasmine with gorgeous curly hair, and I also had the urge to just pull those curls and watch them bounce. Yeah,
she really captured it, didn't she? And the books were funny, but they were also quite heartfelt. They're stories that really stick in your mind, and she was a wonderful writer. And I think she had started as a librarian, or she'd had experience as a librarian. So just a wonderful human being.
And I read, Anna, that she had 91 million copies of her books sold. That's hard to fathom, isn't it?
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. They really did have, endure, I think. I think when you write great stories, and she said she wanted to write about people in her neighbourhood. And so when she was growing up, all the books were about the pioneers or kids that she couldn't relate to as easily. And she looked around her neighbourhood and she wrote about those children. And that's why they really resonated with young readers. So what a wonderful writer. That was Beverly Cleary. And now on to our book of the week, Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro. So this has been a much anticipated release, a new book by him. So Sir Kazuo Ishiguro is a British novelist and he's also a screenwriter and was a musician, Amanda.
Yeah, I read about that.
And this is quite interesting because recently I had Jacqueline Masters on the podcast from 6 Minutes for Me and we were talking about the link between music and writing. Ah. And of course your mind goes blank. You know sometimes of authors who also have a musical bent, but then when you try to think of it, your mind goes blank. And I didn't know that Kazuo Ishiguro was in that category, but it's always interesting to me that crossover with acting or art or music or one of the other creative outlets. And he says that he wanted to be a musician as a career, but then he realised he just wasn't that glamorous and he was more likely to be found in a corduroy jacket with elbow patches, and that writing novels was more his thing. But he was born in Japan and he moved to England at the age of 5, and he thinks that that has helped him in terms of seeing things from a different point of view, coming from another country. He's a very successful novelist. He's been nominated 4 times for the Booker Prize, which he won in 1989 with his book The Remains of the Day, and that was also made into a very successful movie. He won the Whitbread Prize for An Artist of the Floating World, which was a novel that that's the only other one of his that I've read, which I really loved and was a beautiful work. He also wrote the book Never Let Me Go, which also was made into a film, a successful film, and Time magazine named that its best novel of 2005. And he also was also awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature in 2017. So he's very highly esteemed. And the Nobel Committee said, I thought this was interesting in the context of today's book, Clara and the Sun, that he writes novels of great emotional force and has uncovered the abyss beneath our illusory sense of connection with the world.
Right.
So I think if that sounds like your thing, you will love this book because that it seems to fit in that description fits this latest work quite well. So Clara and the Sun is his most recent novel. It's just been published. It's set in an unnamed place. I actually couldn't pick. For some reason I felt like we're in America, but I don't know why.
I think we are because he does mention by name a couple of American cities in there.
Maybe that's why I thought, yes. Yeah. So possibly in America in the future, and the narrator is Clara, who's an artificial friend. So this is an artificial intelligence sort of world, and people buy artificial friends as company for their children. So they're like robots but a little bit more advanced than the ones we have today. And so Josie comes in and connects with Clara and persuades her mother that Clara is the one for her. So Clara goes home with Josie. So we meet Josie's mother, who she lives with, and her neighbour, her childhood friend who lives next door, is Rick. And Rick's a bit of a social outcast, and you sort of sense that there's a backstory there, and you like his work generally, Kazuo Ishiguro, you sort of read between the lines quite a lot. And so there, as you can imagine, this gives rise to lots of questions about, can an artificial friend be a substitute for having real friends? Can Clara feel, you know, friendship or love with Josie? How will that relationship develop? And then what is the story? There is sort of a sense of a dark story that's behind the scenes, and Josie's quite unwell. Her mother's quite protective and seems to have plans for Josie that we're not sure what they are. Clara, of course, is investigating. So there's a little bit of independent thought going on, which is really interesting, raises lots of questions. Then they go on a journey to the town at one stage. So they live in the country, they go on a journey to the town, and it's an adventure for Clara, but it's also, I think, the question of her relationship with Josie, and how do we characterise that? What did you think, Amanda?
Well, I had some mixed feelings about this book. First of all, I really admire Ishiguro, and the other book of his that I've read and loved was When We Were Orphans, and that was published in 2000, so it was quite a long time ago that I read that book. So as an author, what I love about him is he, as you said, Anna, you read between the lines because he's subtle and he provokes thinking about many topics. For example, he touches on environmental degradation. He doesn't bang you over the head with information. He just gives you enough so you think about things. I liked the pace of the story, and that when you talked about him as a musician, that made me think, oh, maybe that's why he's got this wonderful sense of moving the story forward in a really consistent manner. For me, it was very easy to read this book. But the big but for me is I really don't like science fiction.
No.
And this is not a criticism of him as an author. This is more a personal preference. And I find it quite hard to care about artificial characters.
Yes.
So from that point of view, I didn't love the book. I liked some of the messages he had in there and some of the things that he made us think about as humans and where are we going as a species and all those things. But the thought to me that a parent would, instead of encouraging your child to have real relationships with other human beings, would buy you a robot as a friend left me a little bit cold. I mean, maybe that will happen in the future. I mean, already people buy, in Japan, I believe, artificial dogs as pets.
Well, they do. I think Sean Mooney was telling me that in Japan they're buying artificial, they're introducing artificial friends for people in aged care homes.
Okay.
I think that is happening.
Yeah, I can maybe see more of a role for that in aged care where perhaps people are isolated and lonely. But, and maybe this is one of the points he's actually making. If people don't interact with each other, they lose their social skills. And you do see that with Josie, and she gets together with some other gifted children and the parents try and get them to interact and it's all a bit awkward. And
and they lose their language.
They do.
Did you notice her language is quite, what's the word, not condensed, quite choppy.
Yeah.
What's the word I'm looking for? Truncated.
Yes, good word. Yeah, so Anna, I read it quite quickly. As I said, I it was well-paced, easy to read, but I didn't really engage with it.
Yes, I was a bit the same. It was a really easy, engaging read and lots to think about. So there were lots of times I was putting little flags and tags and notes to myself in the book. I resisted it at first, which is always interesting as well when you resist a book as well. And for the similar reasons, I don't like science fiction. I don't like dystopia. And my very first comment, I suppose, when I on the first page was, well, how can an artificial friend be a narrator? Because they don't have a will or they don't want things, you know, that how can they be narrating a story? So immediately I didn't buy into it.
Yeah.
But I did get to know Clara and get to, I thought he drew the character of Clara really well.
I agree.
But the issue that you mentioned of not caring really about her is really interesting because I was the same. And I think, but the problem is if you are caring, if you do start to care for her, and she is portrayed very sympathetically, so she is quite endearing in a way.
Absolutely.
But the more if you're caring about her, that suggests that she's got this personality and that she's there's some quality, or there's that you're worried her feelings will be hurt, or there's something that you're caring about when you care about a character, that they feel real to you. And the thing is that that's not believable because, and that's the question he's raising, of course, but yeah. that if you care about her, that means she's not, she's more like a human. She's been, what's the word, anthropomorphized, you know, the...
Anthropomorphized, oh no.
You know what I mean? The when they sort of humanize...
Yeah, it's normally for animals, I believe.
An animal or a, yeah. A character. And so that... It, either way, it's not quite going to work, is it? But that's the very question that he's raising, is how advanced yeah. could these robots become?
Yes, can they feel?
Can mm. they start to develop? And my view on that, to the extent that we can have a view on our current knowledge, is that I think artificial intelligence can get to a point where robots can be creative. And there's a really interesting book on that by Toby Walsh about... what we think of as creativity, sort of light bulb mm. moments or really human, you know, creativity is always drawn from and inspired by and influenced by existing artworks mm. And in some form or by nature or whatever. So any robot can actually be programmed
sure.
to produce a new work of art that right. has never been seen before, that is what we would call creative, as strange as that might mm. sound, but that's not the same as feeling it.
I think one of the things he's done here is obviously to make us think about just those points,
mm.
but in creating Clara, he's, I think, deliberately created artificial friend, a form of being where he's really just taken the good aspects of humanity. She's like a servant in some ways, yeah. isn't she? Her yeah. mission in life is to serve Josie.
Mm.
She's kind, she's considerate. He's taken away ego, jealousy and things like that. So for me that was an interesting point. I thought, okay, so perhaps if we do create these forms of artificial intelligence, how do we make them so that they don't make our world worse, if you know what I mean.
Mm. Well, she's got no agency.
No.
She's programmed to be, as you say, a servant. And so mm. that raises a whole lot of interesting issues as well. So, yes, yeah, so for me, I resisted that whole idea that there's a question about robots feeling friendship
mm.
with someone. I found that hard to buy into. And it yeah. says on the back of the book, that is the question. And I thought, but is that really the question? You know,
yeah.
that's not a believable question to me. But I love that he's at least getting us to think about that. And also, as I say, we don't know yet what could be possible in the future. So
absolutely. You know,
anything could be possible. Yeah. There were a lot of questions about really creating another underclass of people.
Oh, yeah.
And it was interesting the way Clara was in a shop and they would come in and choose their artificial friend, which made me think of almost a slave market of old days
yeah.
or a brothel or something mm. like that, where human beings are sort of lined up, and in this case artificial humans lined up, and then people come and pick mm. one out. And that in itself raises a question: do we already treat some people like machines? So I found there was so much to think about. I really liked the prose. So yes. I was a bit like you. I had the yeah. mixed feelings. I love his prose. It's very clean, as you say, really well paced. It was an easy read, and it, you know, enjoyable in the sense that Clara's easy to be with. Mm. She's a sympathetic character, although she's quite simple. On the whole, I found it, the science fiction was a bit not my favourite thing, and also the dystopic view. So I think that's what you touched on, Amanda, is that it's sort of I think it's a pessimistic view of the world, of the future. And I, after reading Humankind by Rutger Bregman,
mm.
which is makes you question, well, what do we think human nature is inclined to be good or to be evil, just to oversimplify it. And this to me is quite a pessimistic view
yeah.
of where we're headed, in the sense that the children no longer go to school, they don't have social skills, there are social hierarchies about children being lifted or left behind
yeah.
and it's very dystopian in that regard. And I didn't, that's not something I enjoy reading, and I also, it always makes me wonder, really, is that really where things are headed? But I love it in the sense that it makes you think, well, on the other hand, we already have children who are losing social skills because they're on screens so much. And so
I did think of that too.
It could go that way. Yeah. You know, that's if we're not careful.
He's magnified that problem.
Yes. Mm. So it does make you think about that. And I love that none of that's really written in the text. We're gleaning that between the lines.
Yeah.
So he's very clever in that way. And it's, of course, the question of whether humans will become obsolete and whether we're making ourselves obsolete by creating these machines. But then some of that, I thought it was interesting that it was limited by what he could imagine as the possibilities. And because of the way he wrote, like, he really bought into the world and, you know, just had Clara as a real character, he had to show how it would work. Mm. And so it was limited by our existing understanding. And so for me, it was a bit clunky in some ways. And so on the one hand, we're meant to be at such a forefront that humans are almost obsolete. And some of the parents have already lost their jobs and basically been shipped out to
They've been substituted
already. And so we're meant to be that far advanced. But on the other hand, they're still driving. So they still don't have self-driving cars.
Yeah, good
and
point.
And Clara still can't walk outside easily. And so and that was just clunky in the sense that he got down into the nitty-gritty of the artificial intelligence, which I think was dangerous because you can pick holes in that already, you know.
Yeah.
And for example, they've got characters like Josie who's ill, and I think, well, surely if we're that advanced, we've cured cancer by that stage.
Yeah,
you know?
that's true.
That sort of thing. So in that sense, I thought it was very pessimistic and didn't have enough of the perhaps the upsides that could go with it.
Maybe the clunkiness was deliberate in a way because it made us think about how we do things as humans. So, for example, Clara's vocabulary was a little bit truncated, to use your nice word, Anna.
Limited.
Yeah. So she would refer to things which are probably some form of a laptop kind of computer thing as oblongs.
Yeah.
So, and the other
platform instead of balcony or a veranda, it's
and
a
she
platform.
Described people in terms of how they dressed, instead of saying stylish or something like that, she'd say high ranking.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Really interesting. I think if you like Kazuo Ishiguro, you will really enjoy it. And one of the New York Times critics, who's a huge fan of his work, said that for her it ranks around about third in his books. And she loved The Remains of the Day. Mm. And she had about two favourites, and this was third or fourth.
Right, so right up there.
Mm. And it is a little bit similar, and without giving any plot spoilers away, it is a bit similar, I think, in feel to Never Let Me Go.
Yeah.
And I haven't read that, but having seen the movie.
Yeah.
So that, you know, again, if you liked that book, I think you'll love Clara and the Sun. Mm. So it's certainly, he's got a real prowess, hasn't he?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And I would say it's a matter of personal taste, whether you like sci-fi, dystopia.
Yes.
Criticism of him as an author.
The other one I'd mention, if you like that sort of thing, is Our Life in the Forest by Mari Dariusek, translated by Penny Houston, which is, I think, a really masterful exploration of similar adjacent issues, not the same in terms of the friendships, but, yeah, interesting futures that could be facing us, Amanda.
Mm, hope not.
So that was Clara and the Sun. And next week, Annie and I are reading Open Water by Caleb Azuma Nelson. And I think we're also going to read Detransition Baby by Tori Peters, which has just been longlisted for the Women's Prize. You can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Amanda?
I'm on Instagram at vibrant_lives_podcast.
fantastic. And that's your other podcast, isn't it?
So it's it is. Renamed I've had a rebrand. Now. It's called Vibrant Lives Podcast, and it's about all things to do with well-being.
Fantastic. So that is it from us. We will see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.